And so many things going on. The tax bill, which we've had a chance to talk about during our broadcast today. All of the year-end activities that are involved in your planning for what you're doing tax-wise at this time of the year. All of these things going on out there. And it's just one of those situations where, hey, it's the time of the year. It's mid-December. And you get into this time of the year, I'll tell you what, there are a lot of balls in the air. For those of you that are trying to do your planning on your taxes, the last day that you can take a tax loss, well, gain for that matter, but that's academic. You take a gain whenever you want. The last day you can take a tax loss, if you can find one, will be Friday, December the 29th. This is an unusual calendar this year. New Year's Day is January 1, is a Monday. New Year's Eve is a Sunday, December 31, market closed. The day before New Year's Eve is a Saturday, December 30th, market closed. That means the last transaction day, and the market will be open all day on December the 29th till its regular 4 o'clock Eastern time close. They do that because people want to do transactions on the last day of the year for tax reasons. So you will have until the close of business on Friday, December the 29th, to do your tax-related transactions. And this coming week, you'll, of course, have a full five days. The following week, you'll have 4 days, the 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th. So as of right now, there are 9 days remaining for stock market transactions and also bond market transactions in calendar year 2017. So you have this remaining time to make the changes that you want to make in your portfolio. Now remember, you're allowed to finish the year with a loss of $3,000. You have the potential to take a loss of $3,000 on your final counting of your gains and losses, and if you wind up minus $3,000, you can deduct that amount from your ordinary income. So then if you have more than that, you can carry it forward, although many are having a hard time finding losses in a year like this where you have the stock market at a record high. You know, the Dow Industrials have made 69 record closing highs in calendar year 2017. The next time, if they make one more closing high this year, they will break the record they set in 1995 when they made 69 record high closes. We already have 69 on the board. Next one will break that record for number of closing highs in the same calendar year. So we have all of that going on out there. Now, there are certain prepayments you can make also on your tax return here in the month of December. If you have the ability to do so, you can prepay property taxes. You can prepay medical bills. You can make various payments like that that could be helpful to you when you put together your numbers for your 2017 income tax return. So that's another consideration. We've all already talked about the ability you have to make charitable donations, including charitable donations from your IRA up to $100,000 per individual. And ideally, this is used in connection with a required minimum distribution where you have to take the money out anyway, whatever your RMD might be. If your RMD is 10, 20, 50, or if it's 100 or more, whatever it is, you're allowed to gift up to 100 if you instruct your custodian to make that gift directly to the beneficiaries. Another thing you can do if you want to save taxes and be tax smart is to give away appreciated securities. Like if you had stock worth $10,000 and your cost was $1,000 way back when, you could give that stock away and that would be a $10,000 gift that you would be making. So you could do it on that basis, too, and that would be a charitable donation, which is deductible, and you'd be able to deduct the full value of your gift, even though your cost was $1,000. If the market value is $10,000, you'd be able to deduct the full value of that gift. That's another item to keep in mind when you are doing all of these various end-of-the-year transactions. Bob Brinker here. This is Money Talk. Mark, it's your turn. Welcome.
Hey, Bob. I appreciate you taking my call. I got a quick question, and I appreciate you your input on that. A lot of misinformation is out there in terms of what repatriation or what a more favorable tax rate would do. Can you let us know what exactly you think it will do to help the middle class?
I don't think this bill is written for the middle class. And when I hear politicians talking about this tax bill being for the working man and the middle class, I don't know what they're talking about, Mark. I don't see it that way. I think that I have been very clear on the broadcast today that there are three major beneficiaries of this tax bill. And the major beneficiaries, in my opinion, are high earners because they get a substantial cut in the top rate. Also, many business owners because of the pass-through provision, and also high net worth individuals who had a doubling of the married couple estate tax to $22 million. To me, those are the major beneficiaries. You tell me, because I'd like to know, how does that benefit the middle class?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I just, you know, and I was hoping to see if you thought that maybe there's a chance that through, you know, tax breaks, lower tax rates, more favorable tax rates, that it would allow business owners and companies, corporations to be able to, you know, grow, expand, create some jobs, things of that nature. Is that, you think that's
I never understand that narrative, because I believe that companies expand based on demand for their products. They don't expand based on tax policy. They need demand for their products to justify hiring and to justify building plant and equipment and buying equipment and building plants. They need demand. And unless they have the demand, they're not going to do it, as I see it.
Right. And so just allowing the companies to be able to keep a little bit more of the revenue that they've generated each year, you don't think that there's a possibility that in some cases that could allow for them to, you know, if they're coming out ahead at the end of the year because they're allowed to keep more of their revenue, there's a chance that they could be willing to, you know, start to expand the business if they know the demand is there, but maybe they don't have the capital to be able to do it. Well, then maybe now they do. I mean, I don't know. That's just
The problem with that is that there's no shortage of capital right now. We are in a highly liquid economy because of Federal Reserve policy. There's money all over the place. There's no shortage of money. Companies are flush with cash right now. They have a lot of cash right now. And I would say that from my experience, I've never had a conversation with a CEO where the CEO said, if I could get a tax cut, I would give my employees a raise. I don't see any connection at all.
Yeah, I agree on the raise. I mean, I don't see that happening either. I thought maybe that if there was a chance, you know, that they're hesitant on expanding their business, that maybe with, you know, allowing them to keep a little bit more of the money, maybe they would, you know, go ahead and take that jump and take, you know, expand the business this year or next year.
If they see the demand, there's no doubt they will do that. But they have to see they have to have a visibility of demand. It can't just be talk, which basically, I guess right now, it's just talk. We have to see that demand. And we've heard various figures thrown out there about the economy growing at 5 or 6% real. I don't know how we could possibly expect that to happen unless we're willing to encounter higher inflation, higher interest rates, and a tight Fed. Then, you know, that would be a different story, but we haven't seen those kinds of real growth numbers. So I don't know where that would come from. If you go back to World War II, at the end of World War II, in the mid-1940s, the real growth rate of the U.S. economy is 3.2%. 3.2% all the way back to the end of World War II. So I don't know where these people come up when they talk about real growth of 5 or 6%. I personally think they're making it up. I think it's fiction, and I don't expect it to happen. But unless you have that discernible demand for your product, I don't see any way that you're going to build factories, buy equipment, and hire workers so they can stand around reading books or twiddling their thumbs. There's just no point. Let me add one more point to this with reference to the money that comes back from overseas, and I'm in favor of all of this. Let me say that this money that comes back from overseas historically has been used for three things: buying back stock, paying dividends, and mergers and acquisitions. And that's what I expect.
Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it. With so much information, disinformation we have out there, it's important that we hear, you know, as close to the facts as we can. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Well, there's one thing for sure. We have been in a disinformation tsunami when people are being told they're going to get a raise of up to $7,000 a year because of a corporate tax cut. That's not what companies do with tax cut money. And by the way, this is a big tax cut. This is from a top rate of 35 to a new rate of 21. This is from an effective rate of 26, which is going to also come down closer to 21%. This is a big tax cut for corporations, and they definitely benefit, and they definitely have more money to buy back stock, pay dividends, and do mergers and acquisitions. There is no question about that. And we do have a corporate rate now at 35%, which is too high to be competitive in today's world, where you can go to a place like Ireland and get a rate closer to 12%. 35% doesn't cut it anymore, doesn't work anymore, and it really has to be taken down. It's taken too long, by the way, to get it down. One more point on this. We have an unemployment rate in the United States today, which has already gone through the full employment threshold, and it's 4.1%. And at 4.1%, you get into a tighter labor market. And when you go into a tighter labor market, that means you have a harder time finding qualified people to take jobs. It also, in a tighter labor market, it means that people will leave their job to take another job in order to make more money. And in a vibrant job market like this, where it's a 4.1 unemployment rate, that's something that can also place pressure on wages. If we get into a situation where we have wage pressure, then we have a potential inflation problem in the future that will have to be addressed by the Federal Reserve. Right now, the Federal Reserve is not addressing an inflation problem, because the key rate that they watch, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, it's less than 2%. So they're not losing sleep right now about inflation. Year-over-year wage growth right now has inched up, but it's still only at 2.5%. But all of these numbers are interrelated, and they're related to the growth rate of the economy, and they're related to the unemployment rate. So this idea, and this is I'm glad the caller mentioned disinformation. This is another example of the disinformation that's out there today. I don't know how the typical citizen can even keep it straight anymore. The disinformation is everywhere. But let me say this. The last time in the world that you would want to stimulate an economy is when the unemployment rate is 4.1%. You don't even want to think about stimulating an economy when the unemployment rate is 4.1%. Not only that, but in the last 6 months, we have had real GDP growth of 3% plus on an annualized basis. I'm going to say this straight out, and I think that everybody listening to the program will hear me loudly and clear. If you went to an economist today and you said, I have an idea. The unemployment rate is 4.1%. The economy has grown at a little over 3% real annualized for the past 6 months. Both of those things are true, by the way. Well, here's my idea, you would tell the economist. Let's stimulate the economy. The economist would look at you like you were out of your mind. It makes no sense. By the way, what are the downsides if you overstimulate the economy at the wrong time? Well, the downside potentially would be that you would run into an inflation problem down the road, that the Federal Reserve would immediately take note and tighten monetary policy. And very often when they get into that frame of mind, they over-tighten monetary policy, bringing an end to the expansion. This is dangerous stuff. Dangerous stuff. That's why it's extremely important that the people who make policy understand economics. The people who make policy at the top in any country, it's extremely important that they have a full grasp of economics. Because if they don't, they might make mistakes. And if they make mistakes, well, the country pays the consequences.